Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue our coverage of the recent market volatility, though we will turn focus overseas to Asia and what we've been seeing within Asia equity markets over the past week or so. So with that, joining us for the conversation today, glad to welcome back emerging markets strategist for the Americas with UBS CIO, Jingchen Yu, joining me right here in our New York podcast studio. Jingchen, great to be with you today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me. Great to be back with you in the studio.
Absolutely. So we have been tracking the turbulence specifically within U.S. equity markets here on the program over the past few days, though the turbulence does extend beyond the U.S. and into Asian equity markets as well, including Japan, which we will focus on in a few moments. Though to set the stage today, Jingchen, can you walk us through briefly what exactly has taken place over such a short period of time?
Over the past couple of trading days, as you might have known, we have seen extremely volatile sessions. Without commenting too much on the U.S. market, just looking at the VIX index, which is a sort of common measure of the stock market expectation of volatility, right? It has reached levels that we haven't seen since the global pandemic. Now, on the Asia side, Japanese stocks were down 20% in the first 3 days of August before recovering 9% immediately after on the 6th. During the same period, local Korean and Taiwanese stocks were also down more than 10% before rebounding. This, along with broader market sell-offs, had led to a close to 7% correction of the emerging market index as well within 3 trading days. So what really happened? To start off, last week, the Bank of Japan announced an interest rate increase to 0.25% or 25 basis points, and a bond tapering plan, which was viewed as a relatively hawkish move. We know the Japanese economy has been long stagnant given the deflationary pressure and low growth, which was sort of accompanied by very ultra loose monetary policy. So therefore, as global central banks were raising interest rate over the past couple of years to fight inflation after the pandemic, investor had also been taking advantage of this funding cost mismatch by using the Japanese yen as a low-cost funding source to get positions in higher-yielding securities globally. Hence, you've seen double-digit depreciation as a result on the Japanese yen that have actually accelerated this year. Now, as Japan's monetary policy has turned towards the tightening side finally, from an ultra-loosening stance, this had triggered unwinding of the so-called yen carry positions globally. And the timing is also a bit unfortunate, since on last Friday, the U.S. non-farm payroll and unemployment both signal a faster-than-expected slowing down in the labor market here. So investors have sort of extrapolated this a higher recession risk, right, and demanded more forceful Federal Reserve easing, which has led to further turmoil in the global equity markets, especially those most sort of crowded positions, including global and Asian tech stocks. And of course, flight to safety, including the U.S. government bonds and safe haven currencies such as the yen or the Swiss franc. So over the past couple of days, though, markets began to sort of reassess and sort of rebound on Tuesday as well. And the BOJ's relatively dovish comments on Wednesday, highlighting financial stability was also able to sort of help stabilize the market, at least temporarily. Before I pause, I also don't want to ignore the fact that and another important source of market concerns that have probably weighed on sentiment on top of what I just described is the geopolitical tensions and situations in the Middle East.
So a lot of factors in play. You put some numbers around the swings we witnessed across Japanese equities, Jingchen, quite eye-opening. So I'm curious, as we now look ahead, what is CIO's view on Japanese equities from here following these latest shocks?
Things are still a little bit fluid, but in brief, first, we think volatility could continue to stay elevated until we are confident enough that global risk sentiment recovers and the yen really has stabilized. On the yen side, our FX team's view is that the yen will eventually stabilize within a 145 to 150 range against the dollar in the coming month. But we should not forget it is also a safe haven trade or currency, as we just discussed. So a lot still depends on the global risk sentiment. Again, maybe quickly to reiterate our U.S. economy team's view, which is that it is still premature to overreact to just one single data point. In fact, we think the economy is still on track, sort of achieving its soft landing here in the U.S. Therefore, and fundamentally, we think markets are overpricing the extent of likely Fed easing, and the yield differential between the U.S. and Japan also indicates that maybe 140 is a strong support level. As for the Japanese local stocks, as of Wednesday, following the deep correction, valuations actually suggest that we may be close to support levels for Japanese equities. At this juncture, though, volatility, again, is likely to stay elevated. And given the FX headwinds that have already materialized, we might see some of it being reflected in the upcoming earnings estimates as well for companies. So we want to continue avoiding highly FX-sensitive stocks and instead focusing on beneficiaries exposed to some of the structural and fundamental recovery. So this could include banks, real estate, electronic components, as well as AI-related stocks, etc.
So the volatility not limited to Japanese equities. If we look out more broadly, we have seen volatility across Asian equity markets, and Asian tech in particular is a standout. I recall you and I, Jing Chen, had a conversation on Asian tech stocks back in March timeframe. So it does seem like a dislocation based on what we've seen over the past few days. So how best to navigate from here?
Indeed, the moves we were seeing in Asia tech, especially in places like Taiwan, South Korea, were quite big. Fundamentally, these are also the earnings leaders, right? And after such a large-scale market dislocation, we think, generally speaking, they're looking more appealing. We close our EM tech tactical calls after such a strong performance in July, in part due to global uncertainty. But I think from here, after an adjustment like this, we believe investors should maybe take advantage of recent weakness to add to their strategic exposure to key secular growth beneficiaries in the tech sector globally. That is highlighted in our in some of our preferred themes related to AI. And these are the names that we think as good quality as well, with resilient balance sheet and cash flows, that should also help them outperform peers during market downturns. Also, maybe finally, on a related note, we continue to like South Korean stocks. Recently, as I said earlier, they have disproportionately suffered from global factors lately, but given their superior earnings growth prospects this year, and also exposure to key secular trends, including AI, with recent positive development around high bandwidth chip memory certification, for instance, we think the risk reward looks more appealing now. If the Fed start to ease its monetary policy while managing to avoid a recession, the Korean market should also rebound.
Well, Jing Chen, thank you very much for dropping by the New York podcast studio. Very helpful insight into what we've seen across Asian equity markets over the past week or so. Do appreciate the guidance as we look ahead and think about positioning and delivering that global perspective. Thank you again for dropping by.
Appreciate it, Dan.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.